Boom.
Yo. All I'm hearing is cops that, cops this. The cops shot niggas. It seems they mistaken their badges for SWAT stickers. I wouldn't be surprised if they traded in the Billy Club for a noose. That's the sound of the overseer overhead. Notice where they are at all times, in the towers, in the cars, some marks. Swine and wolves clothing, heavy patrolling the area. Subhuman treatment got us feeling inferior. Be scared of a Taliban, nigga, please. I never seen them, an Al-Qaeda roaming in the streets. Just a real terrorist threat to low-class Americans. Especially us with dark melanin. It's evident they want us gone, removed from the earth. No questions asked, man, they shooting you first. Blah, another youth in the dirt. Another youth in the dirt. All I wanna know is, damn, why you wanna hate us cause our skin tone? Damn, why you wanna kill us cause our skin tone? Damn, why you wanna hate us cause our skin tone? Damn, why you wanna kill us? Why you wanna kill us? Damn, why you wanna hate us cause our skin tone? Damn, why you wanna kill us cause our skin tone? Damn, why you wanna hate us cause our skin tone? Damn, why you wanna kill us? In LA, Ferguson, right here in New York. Shot down, snuffed out, strangled over Newport. So, what's the worth of the black life? Lucy's fatal confrontations resulting paid vacations for the beast. Getting no cheap, settling out of court while we grieve for the deceased. They never feel remorse. What they wanna kill us for? Lock and imprison us. They brought us over here, now they wanna get rid of us. Shit is getting ridiculous, really unbearable. The sad part about it is all of them ain't terrible. The bad seeds overshadow the good ones. Open season for the black man in the hood, son. They want us gone, removed from the earth. No questions asked, man, they're shooting us first. Blah, another youth in the dirt. Another youth in the dirt. All I wanna know is, damn, why you wanna hate us cause our skin tone? Damn, why you wanna kill us cause our skin tone? Damn, why you wanna hate us cause our skin tone? Damn, why you wanna kill us? Why you wanna kill us? Damn, why you wanna hate us cause our skin tone? Damn, why you wanna kill us cause our skin tone? Damn, why you wanna hate us cause our skin tone? Damn, why you wanna kill us?
Hello, welcome to What Would Save the World. My name is Tuke Edelo, and that was Want Us Gone by Ant McQueen from Steel. He's a Steelohim recording artist, first generation, and you'll be hearing his song Remain Cool later. And today in the studio, we have Kinetic, who is a producer for Steelohim, and we have Ben James, who is a community, very much involved in the community in Staten Island. So why don't you introduce yourselves?
Hi, what's up? My name is Kinetic of Steelohim Recordings. I run a label. I'm formerly of the hip-hop group out of Bushwick called The Arsonist, Rocksteady MCs and Zulu Nation. Shout out to all of them in Bushwick. And shout out to all my artists in Staten Island, you know, working really hard to, you know, change the waves of what's going on in our current culture, you know, with their music and to make change. So, you know, salute to all of them.
All right, Ben, you want to say something?
My involvement in whatever is going on in the lives of people today, I know affects me. So naturally, I'm going to do anything that I can do to add to that. And I do that by, on the local level, my neighborhood. We have our own neighborhood cooperative that we work with. We have other people involved in other things in the community, the civic. And so I'm just involved. This seems to be a positive thing here that you're doing here at Radio Free Brooklyn, mm-hmm. You know. And so anywhere that I can fit in and put something positive in there, I'm happy to do that.
Great. I'm super excited to have you here. So today's episode is going to be like, you know, a lot of stuff has been going on right now with Black Lives Matter, with Alton Sterling and Philando Castile. And that song you just heard was about issues related to that. Do you want to say something about that song specifically?
Yeah. I mean, the song was, the funny thing is, you know, in light of everything that's been happening, I reached out to one of my recording artists, Ant McQueen, who's, you know, well-read, you know, always reading on, you know, Black history and American history and, you know, trying to figure out as to how we got here, how we got to this point. You know, his music's very socially aware, you know, and I really appreciate that about my artist, you know, that they are very socially aware. And so I called him, you know, a couple of days ago, and I said, man, you know, do you have anything, you know, that fits what's going on right now? You know, because I know that you sit on a lot of material, you know, thinking about putting it out on separate projects. And so he said, yeah, I have something I recorded about 2 years ago with producer, French producer, Kayo Itachi. It's not even titled. I mean, I did it and I didn't know necessarily what to do with it. And we didn't have an avenue to put it out at the time. It was about 2 years ago during the Eric Gardner case. And he wrote this and he sent it to me that night. And, you know, I just thought, you know, even though it's 2 years old, it still touches base on everything that's happening now, including the line where he's just like, you know, this isn't even an anti-cop song. You know, a few bad C's ruined the whole bunch. And so it's not even against blue lives. It's just about protecting our lives. And, you know, there's a lot of discussion with All Lives Matters. And, you know, look, all lives do matter. This isn't about the fact that we want to disregard any other human life out there. You know, as a supporter of Black Lives Matter, who is sometimes even conflicted with Black Lives Matter in terms of it not being a central, you know, there's no central leadership in a sense. And sometimes that can get lost in the sauce in terms of how do we organize without having someone to point to organize with. You know, we can organize with each other. But I think that there's some issues sometimes that I have with you know, we had leaders and people that were willing to die for what they believed in and people that were willing to stand up and say that, you know, this is what we are doing to organize and we are leading this organization and, you know, steering it in the right ways and meeting with the right people. And I believe in a centralized, you know, leadership in a sense. You know what I mean? I believe that we all should be leaders, but we all should be able to be followers at times to know that we're all under the same umbrella. So I have conflict with that sometimes. But overall, the general message and consensus dealing with Black Lives Matter, you know, is the way to go right now. We need to focus on this. We need more people talking about it. We need more people of non-color, you know, standing up and talking about this. So, and we need more community organizations. So, you know, that's what I have to say about that.
Oh, I want to introduce Jordan Searles, who just came in. Is that how you pronounce it? Searles?
Searles.
Searles. Yeah, hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
Sorry, I'm late.
Oh, it's cool. I don't care if this goes in the air. If you want to move closer to the mic a little bit, because that's kind of...
Is this good?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, we're talking about Black Lives Matter and things like that. If you want to introduce yourself a little bit and talk about yourself for a minute.
I mean, I don't know what to say about myself. I mean, I don't really do anything. I'm a comedian. I'm a writer. I run my own 2 podcasts, which is why I'm late. I mean, I'm not really part of anything in terms of the movement.
I think that you are.
I mean, I talk about it a lot, but I don't really.
Well, as a comedian, I think that comedians in general are people that are secretly angry and are observing.
I feel like my anger isn't a secret.
I think that comedians observe the world in a way where they choose the things. They choose what they talk about according to the things that almost want to make them cry, and they find a way to make you laugh about it in order to point out softly what's going on in the laugh.
Well, so, that makes it sound really important.
I think it is very important. Really... I think comedians are very important because you're able to laugh about the stupid shit that we do as human beings and make light of it to allow people to recognize it in themselves.
I mean, the reason why I invited you here is because I see all the stuff you're posting on Facebook all the time. You say some really intelligent stuff.
Yeah,
because you have to be.
I agree with you in terms of there really not being any leaders, and I don't really know why that is.
Well, because our leaders got killed.
Well, yeah,
our leaders get killed on a constant basis, and people are tired of dying over bullshit. So, I can understand why, but I still feel like there needs to be a couple of people that are strong enough that are willing to say, "Fuck it, I'm willing to fucking go all the way with this," and if I get killed over this, you know, that it won't go in vain. And, you know, I think that we all have to have that mentality in the sense that we should be willing to say what it is that is important to us and know all the risk and say it anyway, you know, to feel the fear and do it anyway.
Do you think that some of that horizontal organization comes from, like, the idealism of that from, like, Occupy, where people didn't want to have a leader? Do you think that's made its way into political movements in general?
I think that that's been something that's been going on, I mean, since, you know, 4chan and Anonymous.
Oh, yeah.
I think that they inspired a movement of people, whereas, and even them, they're centralized to a certain degree because there are organizers. It's just anonymously done. And I think that, you know, they're attacking it from a different level where they're going into data and they're getting data on people and releasing data to show you what's going on. But it would help to have a hero. You know, somebody has to step up and put the S on their chest and say, it's me.
Do you think anyone, like, there's anyone who has the chops to be a hero? I mean, the first person I, of course, think of is, like, Bree Newsom, which, like, especially where I'm from, which is Georgia, she's a huge deal because, you know, South Carolina is right there, so... When she went up that flagpole last year, like, we were all, like, down in the South just like, oh my God, like, she's the shit. But I mean,
you know, I think in the 8 years that all this stuff has been going on, in the last 10 years that things have been going on, I think that our black president should have been more someone that was on the forefront in being courageous enough to say no.
Well,
I am a little disappointed in what he's done to aid what's going on right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, despite that he's on the right side of the coin, I don't think that he's working completely towards us, and I don't think that he's allowed to, and he's not taking enough of a stand to do so.
So you have kind of like a Cornel West stance on him.
I have a very critical stance on it. I'm not going to take a side. I'm just going to state, you know, how I feel about what's in front of me.
I will say that I was talking about Obama recently with a friend, and it made me wish that I knew more about government systems because, you know, I studied, like, film and poetry, so I don't really have any knowledge of that. But I was asking him, I was just like, I just don't understand, like, what does the president actually do, because there are so many things that he was upset about, and he expressed that he was upset, but he couldn't do anything about it. And
do we know that he couldn't rebel?
I mean, I have so much doubt about any of the stuff they tell us about the government. It's like, oh, well, we can't do this because of this. I'm like, that's a real, like, I was talking to someone about, like, taxes and this whole thing, how Bernie wanted to do all these things with the taxes. And people were like, oh, well, that can't happen because of the way the taxes are organized. I'm like, well, then we reorganize the taxes and the way they're distributed.
I just don't understand
because I think, the consensus that we got to is that maybe a lot of the issues that Obama had to deal with was Congress. But also, like, I don't understand, because it seemed like, okay, so we had a Democratic president, so then Congress wanted, so then the conservatives in Congress wanted to take power, and so a lot of his fighting was with the conservatives in Congress. But what I didn't understand is, like, how do we have a Democratic president, but then he can't do anything?
My whole thing is, when do you just say, fuck this position? I have to speak as a human being affected by this, and I have to act as a human being affected by this and lead the charge. Yeah. I just don't see enough of a leadership even in him to lead the charge. Yes, he'll mention it. He'll be one of the first presidents to take these issues and actually talk about it and get a candidate like Hillary, who is starving for the black vote, to talk about it.
Oh, yeah, thirsting for that vote.
I mean, she's carrying hot sauce, baby. You know what I'm saying?
I want to know, Ben, do you have any thoughts that you want to share?
You know, I've thought about this black president, the candidacy, what he's going to do when he get there. And then and on one side, you know, you could see that there's a lot he could do. And on the other hand, you have to ask yourself, why couldn't he do these things? You know, it's easy for us to say we ain't up there in that office. And this president, for all intents and purposes to me, he's got a gun trained on him everywhere. Anywhere he goes. Three primary examples. In when he was doing the speech at Nelson Mandela's thing and the guy walked on the sign language, was doing sign language. After that, they found out the guy didn't even know what he was doing. He wasn't even a signer. You got the Secret Service. You got the FBI, CIA, the Army.
Who protects black men's in America?
You know what I'm saying? No, let's don't stop here. Let's go to the jumper that jumped over the fence, got near the front door. Oh, no, that's not going to stop here. Let's go to when that couple in the beginning walked in there in the White House ball, no pass, no credentials, no nothing, walked by everybody. All of those were messages to him. Because
a breach in security just to let him know that, oh, it can happen to you.
Yeah.
Nigga, shut the fuck up. It can happen to you.
I was actually very surprised that, like, he never got shot. I was thinking that he was going to get shot for a while.
The first 4 years, I thought he was going to get out.
I was waiting to get the news. And
he would have been shot if he didn't do what they told him.
Well, they didn't shoot him. They just decided to up the amount of people that got shot during the course of his presidency on the street. The backlash happened on the street. It didn't happen in office. He didn't have an assassination attempt. But because, you know, black America felt so comfortable at that point that we had a black president, we thought, oh, we're in the promised land right now. Finally, we can't make the joke. When we have a black president, that's when I'll do X, Y, and Z. That shit was out the window. So there were a lot of people feeling pride and saying, you know, finally things are going to change because this guy promised us change. And then we had this backlash of racist America killing us.
Well, and yeah, I honestly feel like and people keep on asking, oh, like who would vote for Trump? Which is, man, is such an annoying question. Who would vote for Trump? So many of y'all, especially up here up north, try to act like it's some kind of like utopia and like ain't shit different. Like being up here is not that much different than being in Georgia. I haven't encountered that many differences. I'm sorry, I don't really get it. I just think that y'all are kidding yourselves.
I think it's a little more in undertone here in New York versus it being an overtone in other places. And I think that that's where people get it misconstrued.
Film, remember when I met you, we were talking about that film by Dr. Joy DeGruyter, lecture about post-traumatic slave syndrome. I would say that anybody, for you to really get to some of the core issues as to what's happening today, you know, and where we need to be going, how we need to be doing, you got to go back and look at the psychology of the whole psychic of slavery and what it's done to us, how it's caused us to not like each other, how it's caused white people not to like us, how it's caused us not to like white people. All this stuff is mixed in the pie with the people that really manipulate and move things in this. You know, we are in this world, in governments and in everything. They got a hand, you know, in everything in here. And every move that you make, you can go back to COINTELPRO back in the days of Huey Newton and even further back then. You know, may not have been as sophisticated technologically where they can listen to you on your phone anywhere they want. You know, they have microphones everywhere, but you won't even know it, you know. But the thing that I'm saying is that, like you meant the thing about leadership. Yeah. I dug some things that you're saying. I also think that's where they get us all the time. Bump off the leader. You get somebody, yeah, I'll do it. Bam, yeah. That's it, fun. And then in the flock, everybody run. The leadership, as she mentioned, in the park, the
Occupy
Park, right? The reason why that was, in my opinion, was so successful because they didn't have no leader they could focus on.
Also, let me finish the thought. You have to understand how white it was.
Listen. Can I finish my thought?
I'm sorry.
Right? Okay. You know, so that's the reason, in my opinion, it went so well is because they had the fluidity of leadership. The group mentality is what led. Nobody had to be told run. Nobody had to be told, you know, stand here and things like that. Leadership has to have the fluidity to it that allows people that can't take control of one specific leader to be successful. That's my opinion.
Understand the nature of Occupy was pretty much orchestrated and ran by the privileged.
So that was, decided.
The reason why it lasted as long is because it was ran by sons and daughters of the privilege that decided to be the white voice for change, and you know, we all rallied behind it as well.
But understand that the centralized
leadership that was the group leadership of Occupy wasn't orchestrated by, you know, the disenfranchised.
Definitely
and that makes
not.
A big and that makes a huge difference as to how it's looked at nationwide and worldwide and how it's projected in advertised to the world.
I was at Occupy and I just saw a bunch of people. Or when I look back at it now, who really didn't have a grasp on like what their privilege was. Like I remember that this camp there that was called Class War Kids, and all those people are my friends. A lot of those people, I agree with their views, but they would just be like burning money. It was like straight up burning money, and I thought it was like cool at the time. I was like, oh yeah, money doesn't mean anything. But like there'd be people show up at the park who'd be like, I've been trying to get on food stamps for years, and I can't get on them. I'm having a hard time. And then there's somebody just like burning money.
No, it was better that they donate the money than burn it. But I mean, you know, donate it to a real cause in the inner city. You know, to the disenfranchised in order to empower us rather than burn it and waste it sitting in a park.
Yeah,
I mean, if you really want to help, you have to go into the inner communities. And, you know, that's also, you know, one of the solutions that we've been talking about in terms of what the community should do in terms of, you know, stepping up and organizing within themselves and then making simple demands to the police department, going to meet with the police department and to get them to volunteer as citizens, not in uniform, but in plain clothes, to go to a clothing drive, to go to a food drive, to go hand out food in our communities, to meet the mothers and fathers and daughters and aunts of these children that are on the street, to get to know them on a first name basis, to understand what kind of people they are, and then turn for them to be able to know Dwayne down the block's mother works two jobs in order to put food on the table, and she's not always around, and she needs a community to help raise her child. As I grew up in, where if I did something disrespectful in front of someone else's parent, you know, I got my ass whipped by someone else's parent, and then I was brought to my parent and told on and got my ass whipped there. And if a local cop, you know, saw me doing something messed up, you know, you get locked up for a couple of hours, and they call your parents because they knew your parents. And there needs to be a reinstallation of that, of you know, not sending these cops from Long Island, you know, they grew up in the suburbs and never met a person of color in their life, into the hood for their first year, for them to dislike us. Also, you know, we have a very military trained, you know, in recent years, a lot of cops are ex-military and military trained. We have more of a...
Which is insane to me. Like, it just doesn't make... That is so much to me.
9/11, whether it's conspiracy or not, definitely brought on a more militarized police force. And more of a need for them to take folks from the military and insert them into this police system that is now getting more militarized. So you have people in the last 15 to 20 years that have been killing brown folks and their friends getting killed by brown folks. And then coming here with the mentality of fuck brown folks. So they're already used to killing us.
Also, if someone's in the military... A lot of people in the military develop like intense PTSD. So would they even?
Without a doubt. I lived by a military base, and I had a lot of like. Well, a lot of my boyfriends were in the military, and like a lot of them were like they. I would find out that they were like obsessed with guns and like obsessed with kind of like taking care of themselves and like having their gun and like being armed and like just like shooting, like playing shooting games, like it makes you devalue like what a person is. I think.
Yeah, because it's us. It automatically becomes us against them. Also, in the talk of PTSD, you got to think that if you grew up in a poverty stricken neighborhood or poor neighborhood, you also suffer from PTSD.
Oh, definitely.
You also suffer from watching people get killed by policemen, by other people in the hood that are struggling. You know, the only reason we're killing each other is because we're out of resources and we don't,
you know, we a lot of folks aren't taught the other way.
Yeah.
So we turn against each other because we're living right on top of each other. You know, there's no space between how we live. So we're all compressed on top of each other. It makes it easy for us.
I was actually thinking about that. Like, if somebody is stealing, does it mean they need to go be punished, or does it mean that they're in need of resources that they don't have?
They're in need of resources. They're in need of an education. They're in need of programs. They're in need of rehabilitation from the PTSD and the problems that they've faced all their lives. I mean, you know, thank God for, you know, the Black Panthers for inserting, you know, free lunches into school when they did, mm-hmm. because for a lot of people to this day, that is their only meal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, just think about that for a second. Sit on that for a second and just really think about it. It's,
I don't know what that noise is.
AC, I believe.
I turned off the AC.
Oh, shit.
I don't know.
Well, technical
difficulties. Let's keep going.
Yeah,
it's all right.
Yeah. It's so, I don't know. So much of what I know, which is like, Tuuk mentioned that, like, I post a lot on Facebook. What I learned, a lot of what I learned is from, like, okay, are we addressing this, or are we,
We're going to leave it.
Outside of the radio station.
People who are listening to this, we're in the basement of a bike shop.
So
sometimes it gets a little DIY, and that's all right.
These things happen. But, like, so much of what I learned about, like, race and, like, sexism, which, like, of course, if you know my post, you know that I talk about racism and sexism as if they go, like, hand in hand, and, like, kind of talking about how they coincide and how they feed into each other. And a lot of what I learned is what I learned from feminism and what I learned from womanism and what I learned from, you know, just, like, taking, like, sociology classes and the information about that I've compiled together to kind of see these things. Because, I mean, I didn't grow up in, like, a hood environment, and there were times when, like, I felt left out and I felt, like, less Black, and I didn't feel like I was part of anything, and I felt like I didn't really have an understanding. And then, especially when I was younger, I had this, like, resentment of, like, not being Black enough for people.
Mm.
And it's that, and that kind of thing can be really harmful to your mind. And it took, like, until I'm older to be like, you know, there's no reason for this resentment, and there's no reason for this separation. It's better to understand, like, other Black people from different backgrounds and try to empathize with them, especially if their position is worse than mine, and, like, trying to understand, like, there's a way, I run in a lot of social justice circles, and there's a thing where we try not to be elitist about language. So if someone, like, speaks in, like, Ebonics or something, or, like, doesn't use, like, proper punctuation when we're having conversations and internet conversations, we don't fault that because it's ableist, and it's because this is how these people talk. Let them talk the way they want. And so it's like a social justice thing where it's like, so that we can be all inclusive, not everybody has to talk like me. We
mm-hmm.
can all talk in the ways that we learned how to speak, and there's actually nothing wrong with that.
I completely feel your pain in terms of being an alternative Black child in the hood, in the neck of the hood here in Bushwick. And I've always kind of spoken this way and handled myself this eloquently, and I've always gotten a lot of shit from folks because I was just thinking on different levels, and, you know, a lover of the language. And, you know, so I got faulted for that a lot, too. So I definitely understand the inner racism, in a sense, or the inner stereotype in race culture.
Which
as
can
well.
Be so, like, it's something that I feel like it's important for us to, like, actively get past, because there can be so much resentment. I hear it a lot in, like, because a lot of alternative Black artists, like alternative rappers, like, you feel like this weird resentment for other Black people because, like, they're not really into what you're into. And it's just like, we shouldn't really be doing that. Like, it's not good. Like, it's something, like, I honestly think that it's something that we just have to get over.
I agree.
Because it's just harmful.
So
I think that you can be an alternative, a quote-unquote alternative Black folk, and still relate to the hood,
yeah,
and vice versa. I think that you can be hood, and I've come across a lot of these folks that are, you know, hood as hell, but then can have a conversation about Howard Zinn, or can, you know, talk about you know, conspiracy theory as yeah. to why we're here, or talk about history, or talk about, you know, those things. So
And I mean, I grew up poor. I just happened to be in a really nice zip code, and in Georgia it's different because everything's cheaper. So being poor in Georgia, you can still go to a nice school. You just go home to your shitty house.
So we have like a half an hour left, so I want to play one of these songs. This song is called No No No.
No No No, and from Aunt McQueen, produced by Aunt McQueen of First Generation.
Cool.
On Steelohim.
Let's play that.
Damn, it's awesome. Can't wait for you to hear this.
Okay, this song, we gotta make sure the volume's up. Something's going on that's weird. Oh, no.
Is No 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 playing?
I don't know, it should be. Let's see how that goes.
Did you download it to your phone?
I did, it's there.
Play.
It should be playing. It says that it is going 09. It says that it's playing. Okay, I'm gonna try one of the other ones for now, and we'll work that one out. So let's play. Remain
Cool.
Remain Cool. This is also by Aunt McQueen.
This is from First Generation. Aunt McQueen is one half of First Generation's Aunt McQueen.
Oh.
We on the one, I'm on the two. Whatever you do, don't panic, remain cool. Yo, we on the one, I'm on the two. Whatever you do, stay focused, remain cool. Yo, we on the one, I'm on the two. Whatever you do, don't trip, remain cool. Yo, we on the one, I'm on the two. Whatever you do, don't panic, remain cool. Cool. And collected under pressure, my next endeavor's my best one. Calculated first generation, fucking vibration, double side, baby, we're lacking the good brother. Who I be, in between them big gals, them checkers, I got out. Niggas wonder how I travel rap. The road in 40 seconds plus an extra 100 miles, but I vow to never tell the secret to the light. Skin Illuminati, bomb first, Illuminati. Filthy in the 40 dudes before Giuliani cleaned it up. I lounge with a Latin born in paradise. Pooped out tobacco, roll to smash studios with my homies, nigga. And we still on a one, on the two. Whatever you do, don't panic, remain cool. Yo, we on a one, on the two. Whatever you do, stay focused, remain cool. Cool.
Zero to a buck, real quick, real swift with the 1-2. Come through, sip a beer with us, put one in the air with us. This is here to get it with us, yeah. We all up in here, so let's get one thing clear. There'll be no ripping, strictly flow, flipping ropes, just the coasts of the red track. Get lifted and get right, or get left. We do it to the death, and it's a bet. We do it with respect to the utmost. Cool as the North Coast, cruise through the track slow. Sound fast and the feeble minded. Come together like matrimony when we align.
On the one, on the two. Whatever you do, stay focused, remain cool. We on the one, on the two. Whatever you do, don't panic, remain cool. Cool.
Just chill with us, feel with us, vibe with us, get high with us, touch the sky with us. Chill with us, feel with us, vibe with us, get high with us, touch the sky with us. Chill with us, feel with us, vibe with us, get high with us, touch the sky with us. Chill with us, feel with us, vibe with us, get high with us, touch the sky with us.
All right, welcome back to What Would Save the World. I'm here every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. and every Thursday from 9 to 10 a.m. So, you know, we're doing a show a little bit about Black Lives Matter and issues around that. We're here with Kinetic and Jordan
Sarles.
Sarles. And then Ben James. And I met Ben James at a community garden in Staten Island called Roots of Peace. And we got to talking about how... about your life and about how you were screening this lecture by Dr. Jane LeGroy.
Joy LeGroy, yeah.
Joy, wait, call her Jane.
Joy LeGroy, yeah.
Dr. Joy LeGroy, and you were telling me about this lecture she does about post-traumatic slave syndrome. So I want to hear a little bit about your life and your experiences and about that.
First of all, I got to say, I was born in South Carolina. And never through my life did my mother or anybody in my family really teach me or talk about negative things about, you know, white folks and, you know, that rhetoric that you might hear as resentment towards the things that they all were, you know, worked hard and, you know, made their bones up here in New York in the movement. But you can't help but growing up in New York and seeing a lot of the things that are happening, particularly back in the 70s when civil rights and these other cultural activities were either coming to a head or in some areas dissipating. The stuff that started in the 60s probably would dissipate, was dissipating, but somewhat of a cultural resurgence happened in the 70s, the early 70s, mid 70s, and then by the late 70s started to drop off. By that time, I had already been in the service. But what I really learned and why I put on that video, that lecture, was there was so much truth and information in it, and it was deciphered in a simple way that anybody with, you know, basic understanding of how life goes and concepts, not even concept, but intellect, it breaks it down to you. After this, the questions that came up, one was interesting and really stunned me. She talked about, well, people will literally work to death. Well, Dr. Joy, how can you prove that science? She proved it. She said she went back, they all dug up the old graves in, particularly down there in Wall Street, and they examined, did an examination on the muscle. They found that it was a syndrome of, I forgot the exact word, but it caused the bones, the muscle to detach from their bones. And they could tell that forensically. So who would work so hard until their muscle separated from their bones, unless there was a gun trained on you? So she really started making it sense, and I thought that having watched this and learned so much about it, I felt that I needed to find a venue to share this with others no matter, you know, what, so that people get thinking on that line of doing something. Because not only are, like I said then when we were talking, not only were black people affected with PTSS, white people too, you know, they're affected by it. The pictures she showed of the people there that were by lynching, kids pushing up towards the front to see the lynching and then the mutilation of. And I'm not saying this to put anger out there. Must understand, before you can get help and healing mentally, we have to come together and realize what was going on with each other during that time, you know, why we felt certain things are okay, why even today, you know, we felt things okay, well, it's not as bad. Like people say, well, I wasn't born that time. I didn't own no slave. My grandfather didn't own no slave. But of course, society-wise, you benefited from that. So there's an inherent responsibility of you to contribute to the well-being of these people of us and bringing it back together, because to continue it on, it's only going to cause further harm, and then the stress will never leave it. Always, then, and if you bring that up to date, the tensions that are going on now here, those are manifestations of it. If you go back to the pictures of the lynching, then you go back to the pictures of today of what's happening with, you know, innocent people getting killed on stuff that, you know. So I thought it was important to bring that out, and, you know, we were just talking, and I'm glad you appreciate it, and I'm glad you gave me this venue to come out here and, you know, express my passion for what's going on like that. And as well as sit together with two young people, because if we don't agree on everything we got, but I'm glad I got the opportunity to connect with younger folks, because if I don't, then I might become irrelevant in even how to talk to them about the things that I feel, because, you know, their minds are moving quick. They want the one thing before, you know, and you might think they ain't paying attention, but they might already be ahead of you. But what I can offer is some solid ground back there. Other famous people, Dr. Umar Johnson, Dr. Amos Wilson, and particularly Dick Gregory. Do some Dick Gregory. And
look back Gregory.
Brother. He did a set at Caroline's recently, and I missed it, but I heard it was really amazing.
He's ridiculous. He's been at it for so long. You know, it's amazing.
And he knows, it, you know, stuff that we would never think of, you know.
But he was in the front lines. Yeah.
So Sure. So what I'm gonna do is I think I'm gonna play "Lifted" by Rebel, who is in the studio with us right now taking photos.
I think everybody needs to calm down. I think if more people in the world smoked weed, things would be a lot more peaceful. You know, maybe they'd have a lot more sex and have a lot more fun and chill the fuck out. So,
100%.
You know, shout to Rebel, who's in the building.
Yeah. So let's.
You know what I'm saying? Get lifted,
on.
Everyone.
Let's
smoke a joint. Chill the fuck out.
Everybody except T.A.
New York City in the middle of the night. Born a guy, third finger to the sky. Breaking blunts with me, myself, and my niggas. Real niggas, bad bitches on the sides of us. When that hater try to give me advice, I tell him fuck that shit, rebel life till I die. I smoke a bowl, then I smoke a stove. Release some stress through my breath, shit I'm trying to get. Buy in this everyday life. After work, hit the bar for Annie and Sprite. If your bitch check once, I guarantee she check twice. When my life goes wrong, then it's time to get right. And I be smoking weed every day. My mama tried to tell me that it's frying up my brain. And she may be right, but it is what it is. Gotta live how you live. Motherfucker, stay blunted. 0 to 100, motherfucker, I'm gone. Need a bad bitch wherever I'm going. Getting it wherever, whenever, you know that I'm grown. Standing on the couches, motherfucker, I'm home. Hey yo, somebody tell me where it's at. Fuck that, send the bottles to the back. Blue dream in the hookah, Asian model on my lap. Turn down for what? Tell them that the rebel back. Haters shout my name just to see how I react. Head nod to your bitch, she'll tell your dad she'll be right back. Are you sure, nigga? You put a ring on her finger like, are you sure, nigga? She say she's sick and I'm the motherfucking cure. Coke boys ain't fucking with this pure. So fly that it looks like I'm pitching pure, nigga. And this my city, so wait till I get on tour with it. Guess who came back for the encore? Said that I was sick of the attention, now I want more. Unorthodox, coming at the game southpaw. If you ain't talking money, the fuck you opened your mouth for? The weak niggas gonna get offended. As well as some weak hoes I always fail to mention. Go get your shine, baby. Do what you want. Shake that ass. You ain't my lady. Still a fat boy. Early morning in the kitchen. Shut some waffles and some chicken. Have a nigga on some pimp shit. Let you small fish fry filling on some pimp shit. Gotta get the cheese, a little butter on my biscuit. Small-minded niggas, y'all ain't even gon' get it. I don't even know why I said it. Nor do I know what these niggas rambling about. All these calls and these bitches, these niggas can't account. Well, I...
All right, welcome back to What Would Save the World. So we are talking about Black Lives Matter and various other issues and opinions and things. So what we want to do now is start to talk a little bit about solutions. And I know Juan, or Kinetic, you were saying something about that before we came back.
I think the first solution is that, you know, like I was saying before, that, you know, our communities, the police community and the inner city communities and the Black communities need to organize and talk to each other, actually have real conversations with each other where, you know, there's volunteers and there's a more humanized relation between the two. Secondly, I think that people people who aren't people of color in this country need to just be Americans and stand up and talk about what's wrong and not be afraid to have the difficult conversations, the exhausting conversations, for us to get to the point where we can actually listen to each other.
I've actually been overwhelmed by how many white comics are just talking about these things. I did not expect that. I mean, they're mostly women, which is another issue entirely. But I did not expect that. I've been really impressed. I've been really moved. I honestly feel like comedy is something that it's become very politicized as of now. Like, because I mean, I haven't been doing comedy for that long, so I don't know I don't know what it used to be like, but I just know that since everything's been going down, everyone in the comedy community has been very upset, and it's been a very like joint upsetness, but there's also been like a lot of helplessness, so everybody's talking and everyone's writing jokes, and most of us are kind of on the same page, but we're all just like, we don't know what to do. And I remember we have a lady comics thread. Oh, I'm sorry.
Rock and roll.
That's me. That's an alarm, so I didn't expect it. There's like a little like email thread for women comics called Nuvering, and like through the thread we've just been talking. I don't know if you're part of it too, but like,
I'm not.
Through the thread we've been talking about like numbers for congressmen, like things that we can do, like just like resources, numbers, websites, and we've been sharing it like among like women comics for the past couple weeks. Yeah. Women comics are kind of amazing, just in definitely. General.
Definitely. I've been having some great experience with them.
I've had some good experiences with just my social media feed. You know, in the last couple of years, I've done my best to, you know, take the people that aren't sympathetic to, you know, our struggle and to erase it out of my timeline. Not necessarily to unfollow, because I still want them to see what I'm posting. But if they're not in support of what it is that, you know, we're fighting for, then I don't need to see your post.
Yeah, I agree.
And the post that I have seen has been a flourish of, you know, lots of support from the white community, yeah. You know, in my post. I just want to shout out Wanja from the I Used to Love Her, I Still Love Her blog, who's been posting mega from Germany about what's going on here. And standing up, and just so many Dirty Souf Yankee, a lot of young folks at arms about what's going on and actually saying something. So I've seen a lot more support from my white followers and a lot more people trying to make a difference, including Tuk,
yeah. You know,
which has been great. So,
I think I see a lot of the roadblocks in talking about these things because, you know, every once in a while, like, I have to have an argument with a white person, which is incredibly exhausting. It's just the worst. There seems to be some kind of, like, empathetic disconnect. Like, just, like, not really understanding. Like, I've noticed it with so many, like, arguments with people that you would consider to be conservative, even though I feel like conservative is, like, a dirty word. But it's just this idea of like intellectualizing pain and not really taking it seriously. I think that that's a huge issue with people that are like against like Black Lives Matter and really just against any kind of social movement towards progress.
Do you think you experience a lot of invalidation? Like people just telling you that your feelings aren't real?
Oh, all the time.
Oh, God.
All the time. Not just as a black person, but as a black woman.
Oh, well, imagine a black gay woman.
Oh, I mean, my
you have
God.
triple whammy.
I'm not queer.
I'm just saying in general, just it's
yeah.
You know, it's there's so many strikes just against, you know, yeah. They can pile them up against us.
Yeah, yeah. And, it's so much, like, I'm trying not to bleed in other issues and stay on topic, but, like...
Feel free to.
I mean, like, okay, the way that... I will liken it to this. Me trying to explain, like, racism to a white person is also... is the same shitty experience of me trying to explain like rape culture to a dude. It's it's just as traumatizing. It's just as terrible. It's just as long, and they often don't get it, or they wait for a white girl to explain it to them.
Well, I mean, what it really comes down to is that people don't feel anything as of you know, the people that choose not to understand what it is that, you know, we're going through as people of color in this country. I think that if it's not happening to them, then they just don't want to associate with it. It's not happening to me. It's out of sight, out of mind. And I'm going to enjoy my privilege.
Yeah, like, I got in an argument with a white dude recently, and I'm a Jamaican person. He was one of those white dudes that, like, wears dreads and, like, quotes Bob Marley and makes me want to kill him. But he, when I was calling him out, he was just like, I'm not going to let you take my joy. And I was just like, yeah, my joy is constantly taken. Your joy needs to take a back seat to us having this conversation. But white people are just like, no, we got to hold on to it.
Well, it's about... You know, we're in a constant state of discomfort in America,
yeah.
You know, and in the world. I mean, it's not just America. I mean, look at what's happening in Africa on a constant basis, and no one gives a fuck.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's about the fact that we're always in this state of discomfort.
Always.
And if we ask them to be uncomfortable for a little bit just to hear us out, and just even if the conversation gets heated, to stay put and just be willing to invest the time in the conversation for us to get to the point where we can exhaust ourselves, where we can hear each other.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth the time. I think that something that I notice in general in terms of how the way people communicate that I watch on a day-to-day basis, I think that a lot of people are, like, emotionally illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people just don't know how to validate each other and hear each other. Like, what you were talking about, like, empathy. Like, people just don't... I don't know. I wonder if some of it is just... I feel like, you know, logic is great. It's great. But I feel like a lot of times, like, that's especially rewarded. And, like, emotionality and sensitivity is shamed. And I think that's, like, part of what feminism is about for me.
Yeah.
Which is, like, you know, people don't have to subscribe to any role because of their gender or feminine or masculine, but I do think that the traits that are considered feminine are demonized.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I think that that plays a role in how people hear each other. When people like express their feelings, there's like a wanting to just shut them down.
Yeah, because they'll be like, you're getting too emotional, and it's like, yeah, it's emotional because I'm emotional because it has something to do with me, so why wouldn't I be?
Or that I'm in pain from this. I mean, you know, when you're in pain, there is no rational response than to deal with the pain. Just if you're going to use logic in your argument, understand the logic of when you feel the shock and the sharp pain of pain, that you can't pay attention to anybody else. That's our natural way of being as human beings.
Yeah.
When you hurt, you don't say, oh, yeah, I'm just going to walk down the block and get myself a cigarette. You're dealing with whatever you're hurt. You break an arm, you're not thinking about what's going on at home. You're thinking about your broken arm immediately.
Which is a lot of, like, I've noticed a lot when it comes to, because I've mentioned a few times, like, I feel like a lot of the people that are really getting in on this and really, like, talking about it are, like, women. And I also, and I feel, and that's not a dig on men, that's kind of like, I feel like so many men are kind of, like, trained and, like, brought up society-wise to not be in touch with their emotions to the point where I just think that, I just feel like men are just, like, a little too cut off. And maybe the reason why women are constantly, like, at the front of all of these things is because, like, we've been told that we're emotional, so we feel our feelings, and we keep feeling our feelings, and we're doing it all over the place.
But you know, also often told that it's weak.
But what's wrong with being emotional?
Nothing.
When did that become a bad thing in America or in the world in general? Like, we're governed by our emotions every day, single one of us as human beings, if all lives matter, like they want to stand by. Then recognize our pain and recognize that we're a part of the equation of those lives that matter and that we need a certain amount of attention for this to stop.
It's completely dehumanizing to not acknowledge it.
Well, you know, I think that, right, on all the above, the subjects that y'all are talking about, particularly the subject when you talk about women being emotional creatures, there's a place for the natural, in my opinion, is a natural place for the emotions in all of us. And women are more sensitive than men. And it plays out to me when you're talking about the role playing and how that plays a great role. And it's not a weakness, you know, in the family. Kid does something wrong. Dad comes home frustrated from work, man. He finds him, oh, he's at school. He did this and that. Boy, you know, money. You was raised down south. You know what I'm talking about. But then the mother has that heart. She looks at the boy's expression. She sees that little wince where tears are about ready to fall. Daddy doesn't see. Daddy doesn't. But then she comes in and softens it, you know, explains to him. So that emotion, you know, like they say the saying, behind every great man, there's a good woman. And really, there is really, the two were created as a complement to each other. It's only when the balance, the knowledge of how to keep that balance going, the experience of, you know, to keep it going, is when it works for you. But when it begins to be, just like anything, we live in a universe of balance. Off balance does nobody no good anyway, and then you don't recognize it, then you're in really bad stuff.
So we have about 5 minutes left. I just want to say, I agree with what you're saying on some level. I just think that there's like a place for both ways of being, just regardless of gender. It doesn't necessarily have to do with gender.
I like equality.
Yeah,
I think
course.
That it should be equality for all, for gays, for straight, for people of color, for people non-color. I think we should all have those things.
But definitely. But I want to say, thank you, Ben James. And thank you, Kinetic. Thank you, Rebel, for taking pictures. Thank you, Jordan Service.
You'll get it eventually.
Oh my God, am I terrible?
Damn it.
No, it's fine.
Wait, Jordan.
Searles.
Okay, Searles. Great. So we have. So if anybody wants to say like one more quick thing, because I'm going to put on no, and I want to make sure that we get through that song. So okay. So I also want to say this is What Would Save the World. My name's Tuke Edelo. You can find me on Facebook on facebook.com/ What Would Save the World. I'm on every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Every Thursday from 9 to 10 a.m. If you want to be on this show, if you have any topics you want to talk about, you can email me at the number 2, like the symbol, KEDALOW @gmail.com. And I'm going to find this song if anybody wants to say something real quick.
I just want to say thank you so much for inviting me up to have this conversation. You know, it's one thing to have all these feelings and emotions and to be able to vent on social media. It's another thing to talk to people in front of your face and to have a real discussion about this and to have a real dialogue and to open it up to the rest of the world. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Shady Lady podcast is on iTunes. Just subscribe. I post it every week. And it's a queer black feminist podcast.
Also, check us out on steelohimgallery.bandcamp.com. That's steelohim, steelohim gallery.bandcamp.com.
And I say this, everybody, hunker down. Because you start watching news and see the things that happen. Number one, hope there's a 2016 election and hunker down because the ride ain't got rough yet.
Follow me on Twitter.
Also, read The People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. Read The New Jim Crow Laws by Michelle Alexander. Listen to lectures by Dr. Joy LeCroy. Look into this stuff and educate yourself and tell other people.
And Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter. All right. Let's play the song No by...
Aunt McQueen. Stop killing us.
Aunt McQueen. All right.
Case you didn't know, I go by the name of Ant. There's a few things that I wanna understand. Where I come from, also who I am. History and elementary, something may seem right. From looking at the textbook, it certainly seems like most of the kings and queens white. But what about us blacks? How did our history just slip between the cracks? Omitting facts from textbooks and curriculums. Done by revisionists, you swear that the system was trembling to break your what? So pay dividends and change our mentality. See, it makes a difference when you know yourself. When you don't know yourself, don't know you can't value and grow yourself. But when you know your history, you know your capabilities and tool sensibilities that heighten your abilities in close proximity with